Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us today. On the show, to begin with, we're going to be talking about a new book. It's titled Gray Matters, Finding Meaning in the Stories of Later Life. With me, the author, Ellen Lem. She's also a professor of English and Gender Studies at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee at Waukesha, where she teaches a variety of literature and cultural studies courses, including one on representing aging in the humanities. On campus, Ellen directs the honors program. She advises the student veterans and enjoys giving public lectures at libraries, book festivals, and care facilities. So it's great to have her with us. Ellen, thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, I'm happy to be here. So thanks for having me on the show.
And we'd love to have our listeners join in, too. And if you have an experience you'd like to share about aging, we'd like to hear from you. Give us a call. The number's 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Or you can send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. Again, love to hear from you. Ellen, let's talk about your new book a little bit here. Why'd you choose to write about the later life experience?
Well, thanks. I would say there were a couple reasons. I mean, on the personal level, a lot of people in their 80s in my life, from parents, step-parents, in-laws, and I just felt as if I didn't really know a lot about it, so occasionally I would field a question. My mom would ask about long-term care policies or, you know, knee replacement, and I just felt, I really don't know anything. I wasn't used to feeling that. You know, I'm a professor who likes to have answers, so that was part of it. But then I also did notice some great books that were out there, like Atul Gawande's Being Mortal, and I thought, wow, there's really interesting research and literature on this subject as well. So that was the beginning.
That was the beginning. So, and what were you really, what were you learning, hoping to learn about or from senior citizens?
Well, I wanted to find out if this time of life was satisfying. Was it really a challenge based on some of the adversity? There's so much in the public eye in terms of popular culture making aging bad. And so I just wondered, you know, why it's being represented that way. And, you know, are people really suffering? And so in which case it's realistic, or are people kind of unduly worried about this time of life and it's a problem? So that's what I wanted to find out was, you know, why is everybody afraid of getting old? And, you know, is it really as bad as it's being made out to be?
And the meanings behind the word gray in the title of your book, is it?
Multiple meanings, right?
It's yeah.
A professor in me. So I am using it as a way to represent an older population. So using gray in that way. I am also thinking about this book as being not looking at aging as all bad or, you know, ideally positive. So I am looking at the gray matter in between. So and so it has, you know, just all kinds of different double entendres to it.
Oh, well, it's an interesting read for sure. You know, there's a stereotype of people, of older people, being sort of a homogenous group. And, I mean, I don't, that's not the case.
Right, exactly. And that was, I think, probably one of the most important ideas in the book, was to stop thinking about older people as one group that has a certain set of qualities people feel as if they know them, and, you know, instead to recognize and appreciate the distinctiveness of people at that time of life, that you can have someone who is 65 and really struggling maybe with health issues, and you can have somebody who's like in their 90s and may feel physically fine, but maybe, you know, concerned about money or something else. So there's just so many different elements that are going on that to treat people as a group is problematic, which is why I don't like the term boomers, which I mentioned at the very end of my book. That phrase was just coming out as I was putting the finishing touches on the book, that okay boomer. I have to get that in, that I find that to be a problematic term that gets used too often.
And boomer, why do you think it's a problematic term?
Well, because it is trying to put that group in. I mean, when you look at the ages
in a group.
Of it, I mean, right. I mean, it's trying to identify it. And I see it in memes all the time. I feel like it gets a lot of ageism happens as a result of boomer. People think like, oh, I'm just making a ha-ha funny boomer joke. But usually it's something negative. And again, it's just an artificial representation of a time period. I mean, technically, I'm 56, and I'm a boomer because I was born in 1964. And yet, you know, not a lot of people would put me in that category. So that's the problem.
And we do become more and more unalike as we age.
Definitely. Yeah, and that's really, you know, that's really important to see and to not have one set of standards. And, you know, that's why, you know, part of in the book that I talk about the problems with successful aging, because that is trying to put forth like one set of standards. And people are in all different shaped, some, you know, and so like, why put everybody through this criteria and make someone feel, oh, I'm failing aging. You know? What a terrible feeling. Right? Because that's what successful aging says. Like, if somebody is succeeding, then somebody must be failing at aging. And I wouldn't want anyone to feel that way.
Randy in Madison has something to add in here. Randy, hi. Thank you for calling.
Sure, and good morning, Boomer. The what I remember, if I can quickly preface that, growing up as a baby boomer, is that you couldn't spit without hitting somebody that was just about your own age, and I suspect millennials and people after that don't really have that experience. Now I'm 70. My entire life has been the music has been the rock and roller. And the thing, what I've started to notice with other people, because I've certainly noticed it with me, is that people seem to have an age where they kind of anchor themselves. In my case, it was when I was about 25, 26. I actually wish it was a little earlier because when I was in the service. But anyway, that's how I see myself. The other day, somebody was talking about geriatrics, and I just about went ballistic. I'm not supposed to be geriatric. I'm supposed to be, you know, Creedence Clearwater.
Rock and roller.
Well, but the thing is, I do think people have an age where they actually sort of see themselves anchored in time.
Yeah.
Interesting. Well, yeah, Ellen, you want to comment on that?
Sure. Yeah, I think that that's true, and I think it's great that you feel that way. I feel as if what you're saying is that you are not defined by a number, and that's really one of the points that I'm bringing out in the book, is that people should not look at a certain number of their chronological age and say, okay, that means I am, you know, I should be defined by X, Y, and Z. So, yeah, I'm all for that. I think it's great that you see yourself, you know, as your 25-year-old self, and I don't see anything wrong with that. And, you know, just keep listening to music. Music is a wonderful aspect that people appreciate of all generations. And that's sort of one of the points I wanted to make, too, is that we see things too often in generational warfare, like millennials versus the boomers. And meanwhile, there's just a lot of research that there's so much that we share together, and we should do more intergenerational interaction and less like putting people in these boxes.
Thanks again, Randy. Great call. Laura emailed. She was just working in the kitchen when she heard the topic today. She's turning 70 in a couple of weeks, and she felt like she could just cry about that fact. And yet, she's going to keep up the good fight and live an active life, exercising, reading, learning. She says she'll have to read your book.
Well, definitely. I'm hoping that it's really positive. I mean, it gives my heart pleasure that people who I know who are in their 80s, like my mom, are reading it and feeling recognized and appreciative. And one of the things my mom said, thought was like one of the highest compliments, she said, I feel like I'm walking a little taller these days from reading your book, because there is, you know, so much respect being given for that time of life, as opposed to a lot of TV shows and parodies that just like to make fun of, you know, anybody with a walker or anybody with gray hair. So I hope Laura reads it and appreciates it and sees that I have a lot of respect for everybody, and particularly those who have made it into their senior years.
Yeah. Well, and you write it yourself about it. At some point in the book, you say, And this, by the way, in preface, is, I think, a good reason for anybody, whatever your age, to take a look at the book and read the book, is that you found your own ideas and thoughts toward your mom, family members, changing as a result of the work that you put into the book and putting it together.
Definitely. And when there were some initial readers of the book, they kept saying, I want more of the personal. I was trying to keep some of the personal out and trying to keep my researcher hat on. But when some of the initial readers of the book said, we like the personal part. So I did end an afterword where I talked about how my thinking had changed. And yeah, I would say the dominant impression I had was I didn't realize how important it was for people as they age to find purpose. I know that I've now seen research that says it is essential to having a satisfying later life is for people to have purpose. And that doesn't mean, you know, they have to like change the world. And but it means, you know, purpose can be taking care of a dog, making food for neighbors. So having a sense of purpose. And so, yes, that's one of the things that I used to just tell my mom, like, enjoy your time, you read books. And she would say, but it's not really satisfying. And I would just, well, find a better book. You know, so now I get it. Now I understand that a little bit better.
Ellen Lim is our guest, professor of English and Gender Studies at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee at Waukesha. Her book is called Gray Matters, Finding Meaning in the Stories of Later Life. I'm Larry Mueller. Jane Rotunda, our on-air producer today, and our producer, Tyler Ditter, our engineer, and you are listening to the Ideas Network. Talking today with Ellen Lim, professor of English and Gender Studies at UW-Milwaukee at Waukesha, and the author of Gray Matters, Finding Meaning in the Stories of Later Life. Questions or comments for her? How have you found meaning later in life? What do you think it means to age well? How have stereotypes and ageism affected the way you've aged? Are you afraid of aging? If so, why? Give a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us, and the email address is ideas@wpr.org. And let's take another call. Jake in Madison, it's your turn. Hi, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Hey there. This is a great program. I think it's kind of fun. Maybe it's a little bittersweet depending on the experiences we've had in our lives, but if we're still here, we've survived those things and learned from them. my perspective is that maybe I came up with this in my head. I've never heard what anyone else express it, but I feel that we are always any of the ages we've ever been, that we take those ages with us. We're always 7. We're always 21. We're always 33. I'll be 68 in September, and I've never stopped being anything that I was before. I've just added to it. I like having that perspective, and I think it's helpful.
Interesting. Ellen, a comment?
Yeah, I think so. I have heard other people say it, but maybe not quite as eloquently as you, so we'll give you credit for that. But I do think that other writers have mentioned something similar to that, and I think that it's really reassuring. So if people are afraid of getting older because they feel like they're going to lose something, they're going to lose the person that they were, to recognize, as you said, that you still are that person, you carry it with you, and then have all these other selves, that's a much richer perspective, and I think one that gives people assurance. So kind of good for you for coming up with that, and I like that perspective a lot.
I do, too. Jake, thank you so much for calling. Again, you can join in, 800-642-1234. Give a call or email at ideas@wpr.org. You surveyed a fairly large group of people. Maybe tell us about the survey and who participated.
Yeah, the survey was really important to the book. I didn't want to have just gerontology research, and I didn't want to have just analysis of literature and film. I wanted to hear from the people who are going through this and include as many of their stories and their voices in the book. So I did use my mom's services. She's a retired psychologist. So in being true to my book and recognizing that there is people who of all ages still have a lot of their skills and abilities. So my mom helped come up with the first survey, and I worked with students and developed it over time. But yeah, so we asked over 200 people to fill out 25 questions. We went nationwide. People shared the survey. There was both a handwritten copy that I brought to YMCA senior centers, but it was also electronic. People could send it to others. So learned a lot from the surveys and tried to include as much from that material as I could into the book. It was really illuminating.
So what did you kind of ask again, and what did you learn?
Yeah. Right. Well, the questions were all over the place. Some were really practical, like where do you live and are you happy with your living arrangement? Asked about how people socialize, who kind of do they take care of, who takes care of them. But also we went a little philosophical, asking people what their fears were, asking them what advice would they give to their 20-year-old self, do they experience ageism. So they really kind of ran the gamut of the practical day-to-day aspects, but then also the bigger issues. Also, people asked about their losses, and that was really very emotional for me because people talked about children that had passed away and how, you know, that's a loss that they live with every day. So those were really poignant, and in my chapter on the relationship between seniors and their adult children, I included a lot of stories directly from the surveys.
Yeah, and some of the stories, and it's kind of, some of the stories are kind of sad in a way.
Right. Yeah, it's funny. I was on an interview yesterday and was talking about the stories, and I had mentioned one, a very kind of uplifting one, and then somebody was like, oh, tell me another uplifting one. And it took me a second because in my head I was like, okay, I'm not going to tell that one, and that one, because they weren't all. I mean, people were honest with me, and they, you know, I felt as if they were really putting things on the line. So, you know, a day later, I'm like, oh, I remember the 84-year-old architect that said, of course I'm not going to stop working. I'm at the top of my game. I've never been better, you know, but I didn't remember that at the time. So the stories were all over in terms of, you know, people feeling very satisfied and some of the hardships that they have faced.
Connie in Lake Winnebago area. Let's go there. Hi, Connie.
Hello?
Hi, Connie. What's on your mind?
I just wanted to say that old age is wonderful. I'm having the best time of my life. Someone described it as being like a teenager. You don't have to work. You've got a driver's license. I get an allowance. I have free time and free money, and never in my life have I ever had both of those at the same time.
Well, that's great. It's wonderful for people to hear that because, you know, not everybody thinks of in those terms. So I'm glad that you put that out there. And I think you have a lot of people who feel the same way as you.
And you've got a little story. You drive around in a camper, don't you?
I have a travel trailer, 30-foot travel trailer, and I go all over the country. I'm from Florida. Who wants to be in Florida in the summer? So I'm in Wisconsin. And this year, the difference is you have to stay in good health. You have to take care of yourself. I still exercise. I eat right. And that lot, my fear is that if I don't, I have to go home. We don't want to do that.
Well, what about that part of it, Ellen?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, our caller represents a population that is out there that is very content with this time of life. A lot of people are happy to be retired. A lot of people are enjoying just having some of the daily grind, the pressures off of them. And that does support a lot of the research that the happiest people on the planet are those who are over 65. Or I guess they start when they're young, so they describe it as a U shape, that people are very, very happy when they're young, and then they find that again. So that's why I think that description of it being similar to teenage years really will work for a lot of others as well. That will resonate.
I like that. She doesn't have to work. She's got it. She gets an allowance. She calls
right.
it.
Very positive perspective.
Maureen in Madison, your turn. Hi, Maureen.
Hi, how are you guys doing?
Good, appreciate the call.
I had a question. I know you said you were finishing your book, so you don't really get to go far into or really at all the okay boomer phrase. But I was wondering if you know the pattern of how kind of before the okay boomer came, it was kind of set in response because millennials, you know, we can't buy houses and stuff like that. And a lot of the baby boomer crowd kind of complained about us and said, oh, we're ruining this industry. We're ruining that industry. This is why they can't afford houses and stuff, without realizing how, you know, their economic situation has created our current economic situation and kind of what you think on the sound off.
Ellen?
Yeah, I think I heard it came in and out a little bit. So I think what I heard, and you'll let me know if I'm wrong, was you wanted to know, you know, was there some truth to the tension between millennials and boomers? Like I said that in the beginning that I don't really like the phrase boomer and how it gets used, but you're asking, like, you know, is there some truth to it? Is that right?
Well, not so much asking, but asking if what your thoughts are on kind of it was being born out of the fact that, you know, there was this big millennials are reinventing the industry and kind of not able to buy houses and saying, you know, we should work hard and pull up by the bootstraps when the economy is a different lay of the land now.
Yeah. Right. Okay. So I do hear what you're saying. I mean, there is like a recognition that in different historical time periods, people have had to like have some have had to struggle with the economy more than others, and who knows that more now than all of us, looking at, you know, the results of the pandemic on the economy and how that has affected people in ways and will probably for years. Yeah, I guess, you know, I still sort of stick to the fact of I don't like to make generalizations about millennials, and I don't like to make them about boomers, because I feel as if, you know, it really does put people in boxes. I think, and I feel as if the media produces that. It sells a story to have that kind of animus between the two groups. And I just think everybody needs to have more compassion in dealing with it. So I think older individuals should have more compassion with the struggles that young people have now. I have read that there's people have less possibilities of owning a house. There are economic struggles that are real. And then I do feel that younger people should not be making general assumptions about older individuals that they had it easy when they may have had, you know, that period of the boomers made people who served in Vietnam and have served in wars, and, you know, they had their burdens as well. So that's kind of where I'm coming from.
Yeah, Maureen, thanks so much. And let's go to Nancy in Grafton. Hi, Nancy. Thank you for calling.
Good morning. Well, after having 14 kids, I finally got to go to school to be a CNA. And wow. For many years, I did that kind of work. And then so many people would say, oh, call Nancy. She can help. She can help with your mother or your dad. And I was an old farm girl. And, you know, I knew more about cows and tractors and stuff like that and baking bread and all those kind of things. And I had so many people. I also was a hospice volunteer, and so many people I took care of, and I loved those people, and I got to know their families. And now, this was a hard one. My neighbor across the street was needing help with their mom. They called me over right across the street, and I was with her a lot. And she, too, was an old farm girl, and she was older than me. That's pretty neat, older than me. And then one and a half nights ago, my neighbor passed away. And the thing of it is, this is a story. Her daughter-in-law also died of cancer just last week. And so now the mother and the daughter-in-law are back. Or the mother-in-law and the daughter-in-law are back together, and that family was just absolutely wonderful. I told them I adopted them now because their mom is gone, and I adopted them. But, you know, if you have it in your heart, do something like this. It's not about money. It's not about pride, nothing. It's in your heart. And if you care about people, that's where your life should be. And you know what? I have a strong faith, and I believe we're all going to meet again, and we're going to have a good time. Just like when my husband died, I said, when I die and I get up to heaven by Bob, we're going to be dancing the polka.
I love that. And I did notice in the survey results that, you know, I have a chapter on death, and I have I took a lot from the surveys, and not everybody really fears death. And I noticed that a lot of the people who considered themselves religious were least afraid in some ways about death, and they have a similar, I've never heard it put as poetically as you did about the polka, but which I love, but they also embody that same philosophy about do what you can now, make your life meaningful now, and the future is something that not to be feared, because if you have faith, it is very reassuring for a lot of people.
Yeah. Thank you, Nancy,
for sharing that.
Susan in Racine will give you a chance. Hi, Susan.
Hi, this is Susan. And I think we can allow stereotypes to be put upon us, and we need to get rid of that. I'm going to be 66 in September. I feel young because I'm a chaplain in a nursing home.
Oh.
So I can't call myself old. And I think learning new things is really important. At least try them. You're never going to be perfect at something. Just try it, whether it's pickleball.
Oh, you're breaking up now. Susan, thank you so much for calling. I think, Ellen, you want to comment on Susan's remarks?
Yeah, I do think so. And I think one of the things that I was inspired by from all of the stories in the book, both that came through in the literature and even the art that I look at, I have a chapter that looks at artists who were working up until their 90s, is this idea of that every day is a new opportunity and to try something new. And so even for myself, I feel like I was inspired by those people. I gave blood for the first time. I'm a little bit of a squeamish person, and so I never had done that before. But somebody close to me has leukemia, and I thought if she can go through what she has gone through, the least thing I can do is get over my fear. And so I really do embrace that same attitude as our caller, which is, you know, make every day count, even if things are outside of your comfort zone. Don't look at the age as a limiting number. Instead, think about all that you can be and that you want to do still.
And, you know, you drew from something interesting, I thought, but you drew from books and movies to expand the experience of aging folks. And I like that. You had some great comments relating to movies and so forth. But why was that important?
Well, this is the culture that we consume. And so many of our ideas about expectations of age come from movies and television shows. So there's a lot on television shows. They do talk about Grace and Frankie and The Last Tango in Halifax, but even some popular shows like BoJack Horseman on Netflix and some of my least favorite ones, the Family Guy episodes, but they're all part of our consciousness. I mean, we weren't born thinking, oh, being old is scary and terrifying and no one ever has sex once they're over 75. We weren't born that way, but we became that way from the culture that we consumed. So that is a really message in the book as well, is take advantage of not only books that are out there that express complexities of aging, but look for the films, look for the TV shows that also give a wider perspective.
Yeah. And you mentioned, you just mentioned sex, and you deal with that in the book as well.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, I mentioned I was taken to task for not including it on the interview, on my survey. So I take responsibility for that, you know, I was possibly prejudiced as well. So, you know, several people were like, how come you didn't ask about sex? But people wrote in about it. So that was kind of interesting too. And not only said, you know, it should have been a question, but people talked about that it was either important to their life or they were happy now to have a chapter in their lives where they didn't have to worry about sexual relationships. So a lot of different viewpoints on that. But for many people into their 70s, 80s, and beyond, if they can find a partner, still a rich and satisfying part of their lives.
Dave in Green Bay, it's your turn. Hi, Dave.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. You know, I just not giving up the ship stuff here. I'm 65, and I've been riding motorcycles since I was like 12. I had my first one when I was 12, and I've had a motorcycle ever since, and I just love it. But my sons and my daughter-in-laws and that are all like, you know, you should give that up, Dad. You know, you're 65 here. You know, your reflexes aren't quite so great anymore. And I'm like, oh, man, you know, but it's like, so I was down, and my wife had surgery. She used to ride to me all the time, but she won't anymore because she doesn't, I don't know, maybe she thinks I can't see. But, I mean, I was down in Elkhart Lake riding around, and for the first time ever, I was in a gravel parking lot, and I was trying to turn out of there, and I just fell over, kind of like I'm laughing when a guy falls off the trike. You know, I mean, I'm dating myself here. And I just fell over. It's a big bike, and I couldn't get it up. But there were some younger people there, riders, And for the first time, they came up to me and they said, well, hey, old codger, you know, that happens, you know, we'll help you, old man. You know, I'm like, I'm not an old man, you know, I just fell over. I'm like, what do you mean, old codger, you know? They helped me, and I got back up, and I was riding up back to Green Bay, and I thought, well, you know, I am kind of old, but I didn't tell my wife, but I mean, I can't give it up. I'm sorry. And my riding partner's 81. Okay, the guy that I ride, he's 81. And we go, you know, we don't go far or fast anymore, but it's funny because I'd be riding along and then these Crotch Rocket boys would be going by, you know, zipping through the woods, and I'll catch up to them and then we'll talk, you know, but I have a lot in common with those younger riders. I used to ride fast at one time, but I'm not so fast anymore, but I'm not giving up the ship here with the bike. I mean, it's like, you know, my sons are like, they're scared because here I'm going to die, but I said, well, that happens. I went happy, I guess, but you know, I just can't seem to give it up. I'm looking at another bike, and my wife's saying, "You just bought one 4 years ago." And I said, "Well, it's really cool." And then I go in there, and you know, it's like she said, "You can't do that. You just keep what you have." And I'm like, "Oh boy," but that's something I just had a passion for my whole life, and I just can't seem to quit it. I don't know.
Right. Well, don't you have then. To. Yeah. I mean, one scrape does not mean that, you know, that you need to, like, turn in your keys. So, you know, that could have happened to anybody. And, you know, one of the things that your story brings up is some of the research shows that adult children, they value safety most. Like, when they're talking to their parents, so, like, your kid's saying, like, oh, you need to give it up and things like that. But what older people themselves, like, value is, like, independence and being able to make decisions for themselves and, you know, satisfying pursuits. So I see the conflict, but I'm glad you're trusting your own instincts and and keep on riding.
Yeah, absolutely. You talk about the phrase aging successfully, and it's can be a problematic phrase.
Yeah, because usually that has certain associations with it that people need to be, you know, healthy and working out and, you know, living sort of a picture perfect golden age life. And, you know, why it's problematic, I think we mentioned a little bit earlier about the idea that a lot of people can't live up to that expectation, and so they could feel badly about themselves. But also the research shows that, you know, there's a lot of disparities between wealth in this country, and so if you are very wealthy, you can maybe have a personal trainer, you have access to great food available, and that for someone who's struggling, who's like living on their Social Security, they don't maybe not have the same advantages. And so the problem with successful aging is it doesn't take into consideration people's different life circumstances that make it harder. Right before the hour, there was the news report about certain minorities groups getting COVID much more so than others, perhaps due to pre-existing conditions. And so, again, are we going to say those people are not successfully aging because, you know, they have pre-existing conditions and they're more likely to get to have COVID? So those are things that just make me, you know, very uncomfortable. So I feel like we need a replacement phrase.
So kind of winding this up a little bit, how can we as a society do better by our older population?
I think the main one is to call out ageism, first recognize it and make sure that people are not being put into categories. You see somebody who's walking with a walker, don't immediately think of them as a senior citizen, that, you know, most of their exciting days are over. So really kind of call ourselves on all of our own ageist assumptions and to recognize that people live meaningful lives oftentimes up till the very end. And so I think that having a better perception of aging will help us. And the research shows that people live longer when they have a better attitude about aging. 7 years.
We, you know, here we are out of time. Where can people get a copy of your book, Gray Matters. And Gray Matters is G-R-A-Y, Gray Matters.
Right. So they can get, I mean, it is available from Amazon, all local bookstores. It can be ordered from there. It's put out by Rutgers University Press. They have a global aging series, so I wrote it with that press, but it's written in an accessible way for everyone, so people can go on the website of Rutgers University Press as well. So all of those. And also, yesterday, an excerpt from the book was published on the website LitHub. So if anybody goes to lithub.com and puts in either my name, it's Ellen Lem, and it's E-L-L-Y-N-L-E-M, or Gray Matters, you can read a chapter, that chapter that I was talking to, about adult children and the relationship with older adults.
And we certainly didn't get to the many other chapters that I found extremely interesting, the role of loneliness in our lives, so forth. Ellen, I want to thank you so much. It's been a very enjoyable conversation, and I hope we have a chance to meet again on the air.
I hope so, too. Thank you so much for having me.
Ellen Lem, professor of English and Gender Studies at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee at Waukesha, where she teaches a variety of literature and cultural courses, including one on representing aging in the humanities. Again, her book is titled Gray Matters, Finding Meaning in the Stories of Later Life. You're going to enjoy taking a look at it. Ellen Lem. Well, we are going to switch gears with you a little bit here. Wisconsin was the first state to ratify the 19th Amendment. We're going to be talking about the 100th anniversary of women's right to vote. That next. I'm Larry Mehler for the Ideas Network.